Welcome back, everybody, to Secondary Accounts. I am so happy to be here with you guys this week, and honestly, last week was kind of a very needed little break. Just a lot has been going on, from like wedding planning, job searching, and getting ready to move. My parents sold our family house, which is really, really weird because I've never moved before, and I grew up in my home, and now I'm moving out because I'm getting married, and when I go back to visit my parents, it won't be at my family home, which will be weird, but, you know, I'll live. It's just different. And plus, packing is quite an adventure. I've literally gotten rid of so many different things because I'm like, I don't need this anymore. I don't wear this, whatever, because, I don't know, I like to consider myself like a clean person. Some might call me a clean freak, aka Brandon, my fiance. Some people just, I don't know, I love being clean, and some people see me being like, okay, I need everything to be clean, as like a clean freak. Maybe I am a clean freak, whatever. Anywho, what else has been going on? Not much, really. My mental health has not been the best, but whatever. We're working on that. And so I've just been really, really anxious lately. I've had a lot of low days, and just I'm so stressed, but I'm working on it. Something that I'm excited for this week. So we took in my wedding dress so I can get a bustle. So that'll be fun. I pick that up later this week, and also tomorrow, the day that, I don't even know how to like say it. What's today's date? I think today's the 6th. Yeah, so tomorrow on the 7th of June, I'm going to the lake with my fiance, his dad, and his sister to work on our scuba certification. And so I'm really, really excited, also really nervous, because I don't know, I had a hard time in the pool. Granted, again, I was already stressed beforehand, and adding that, oh, this is something new, that's stressful. But now we're doing something that I'm not super familiar with, in a place I'm not super familiar with, in the lake, and I've heard interesting things about that lake. So who knows? You know, I'm excited, also really nervous, but we'll figure it out. And also, it's just, congratulations to the class of 2022. Go off, queens. You got this. Welcome to adulthood. It's so much fun. It's just really wild because I graduated last year, and now my little juniors, they're seniors, and they grew up and they graduated, and that's just really weird, but you know, whatever. Time flies, I guess. And yeah, I guess, well, I also did have my bridal shower on Saturday, so that was fun. I really enjoyed being able to catch up with some friends and to be able to see all the nice women in my life who support me, and that's just really comforting and really nice. Yeah, I guess enough about me. I hope you guys had a wonderful week. And I guess now is a great time to start, so let's begin. Lori K. Suarez Hacking was born on December 31st of 1976. She was adopted by Thelma and Harold Suarez. I apologize. I'm totally going to butcher this. Please forgive me. Growing up, she lived in Fullerton, California, until her parents split up in 1987. There, Lori and Thelma then moved to Orem, Utah. And eventually, Laura attended Orem High School, and that is basically how her and Mark Hacking meet. So from what I've learned about Lori, she was a hard worker. She liked to keep to herself and saw things practically. Mark seemed to be very outgoing, sociable, and Lori's mother, Thelma, even shared how he adored her daughter. Mark was also seen as intelligent. They were quite opposite. And I remember in one of the articles I read, Lori's brother, I forget forget his name. I think it's Paul. Maybe. I apologize if it's not Paul. So Lori's brother shared how in some cases opposites attract, in other cases it just doesn't work. But for them, Lori and Mark seem to be very, very happy and very in love. So Mark came from a family of science fanatics. His father was a pediatrician, his mother a nurse, and a couple of his brothers were successful in their fields as well. I'm not sure what fields they were in, but I know it had something to do with science. And naturally, Mark wanted to be like his family. He had big dreams, and Lori believed in him. They were high school sweethearts, but the kind that were on again and off again. And after high school, Mark decided to serve a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Or like the LDS Church, the Mormon Church, but that's the official church's title. And Mark was called to serve in Winnipeg, Canada. So missionaries for the church, they are to uphold a standard and follow some rules or guidelines, in order to protect themselves and to be able to truly be representatives of Jesus Christ, because that's what these young men and young women volunteer to do. And so the church wants to help them in their journey and in their service, and so they provide them rules and these guidelines. So some rules include not being alone with the opposite sex, not going on romantic dates with them, and making sure to be back at the apartment at a certain time and to be able to work with your companion or the missionary that you are assigned to work with in a certain time period. And also to be able to stay in your area, stay in your zone, so that you don't leave the mission boundaries and everything. So growing up, Mark lived in a religious household with his six siblings. I know I'm kind of backtracking here, but it will all make sense in a bit. Mark was a clumsy, goofy kid. He didn't care what he had to do to make people laugh. He just did what he felt like he needed to do. He was accident prone, more so than me, and I get hurt so much, it's not even funny. I'm the kid in my family who's been to the doctor and urgent care more times than all my other siblings combined. Yeah, I'm that kid. So looking back on his habits and accidents, many people think he was doing it for the attention, or maybe, I guess, kind of a way to break free from all the rules that he had growing up in his family home. Mark really enjoyed and loved having everybody's eyes on him. And growing up, he didn't really have that freedom that he so greatly desired, kind of like how I shared how he has to follow all the rules and whatnot, like we all do as children, and we all do as we live under our parents' roof. Our parents have rules, and I don't know, like, yeah, we follow them, I guess. So on his mission, he felt free to do whatever the crap he wanted, even though that's not the point of a mission, you know? So on the mission, Elder Mark Hacking was not following the rules. He wouldn't go out and serve. Instead, he'd bring girls back to the apartment and watch movies. Mark was never heard talking about any girl at home, specifically Lori. He never talked about her, some of his companions and other missionaries that he worked with said that they never heard a single thing about Lori, which is kind of weird because they were like high school sweethearts, I guess. So one of Mark's companions also wasn't following the rules, and in doing so, he ended up getting a girl pregnant. And eventually they were caught. They came clean to their mission president and was like, hey, this is what's happening, because that's the right thing to do. Be honest and be upfront with what happens. And so they were sent home early from their missions, and Mark was out for 11 months. And for those of you who don't know, church missions for boys typically last about 24 months or 2 years. And since Mark came back before the 2-year mark for doing things that he shouldn't have been doing, he thought the only thing to protect himself was to lie. and Mark continued to lie, even to Lori, after they got married in 1999. Eventually, Mark began partaking in habits that are against the church's beliefs, like smoking and possibly indulging in drugs. He shaved his head and began growing a goatee, causing him to lose his red curls. Honestly, I'm sorry I kind of like phrased that weirdly. You can grow hair in the church. I know. That's just the list that I've read from different articles. That's what he did. He shaved his head, you know, which is fine. If you want to shave your head, go for it. It doesn't make you a bad person. It'll just make you bald. And there's nothing wrong with that. So, sorry for that little side tangent, but I think it was necessary. And sometimes he told the people he sparingly hung out with that he was a therapist, which was a lie. And Mark didn't really tell any of his colleagues what his name was at the University of Utah's Neuropsychiatric Institute. He went by the Saturday Night Live, or SNL, character Franz, which I believe was like one of those bodybuilders. I'm not an SNL fan. Sorry if I offend you guys, but I don't think they're funny. I'm just like, you're trying to be funny, but you're not succeeding. And so Mark worked at that hospital for 5 years, and the starting pay for his position was $8 an hour. Granted, I don't know what like the pay was back in the early 2000s, late 1990s was in Utah, but I have family that live in Utah, I have friends who live there, and I know that the minimum wage there is still pretty similar, which is really weird because I know in Arizona, where I live, it's a little over $12, and in other states, it's $15 an hour and everything, and it's just very different to see how inflation is impacting different states and different minimum wages and all of that good stuff. But it's also just kind of frustrating because you stayed there for 5 years. I don't know if he got any promotions or not. I hope he did, because if you're working somewhere for at least 5 years, you need a raise. And if you haven't gotten one, please talk to somebody about it. Please, I beg of you. You are worth more than $8 or your starting pay when you have more experience than somebody that they just hired yesterday. Cool. And so, while he was working there at the Neuropsychiatric Institute, kind of a handful, like a big handful to word. I don't know. I'm not wording it correctly, but you guys are picking up what I'm putting down, I hope. There, his employers recognized him as a great employee. Like, he interacted with the patients and worked on some activities with them. And at church, Mark was a nursery leader. He played with kids and kept them entertained during the different classes. Mark helped others, and that was true. His friends constantly saw him helping others and making time out of his day to serve. Like, seeing random motorcyclists pulled off on the side of the road, he would pull over and be like, hey, do you need anything? Like, what can I do to help? And so, going back to Mark's childhood, his best friend, named Ross Williams, did everything with him. They were in scouts together, they were with each other through thick and thin, and Ross was actually the person who introduced Mark and Lori together. Mark and Lori actually met at, I'm assuming it was like a youth group trip or a high school trip to like, I'm forgetting the name of it right now. I apologize. Lake Powell. There we go. That's the name. Yeah, it's Lake Powell. And that's where they met. And so from there, Lori and Mark appeared to be happy and madly in love and making things work, and until she went missing. On July 19th of 2004, Mark contacted the police that Lori never returned home from her jog that morning. At 10:07 a.m. is when he called them. And at 10:46 a.m. he called again and shared that he found her car where she said she went jogging. And so police were obviously like, oh my gosh, we have a missing person case, and we already know, guessing the area where she was when she went missing. And so a search to find her began. Many volunteers stepped up, meaning their friends from church, neighbors, coworkers. Everyone wanted to help to find Lori. Everybody loved Lori. She was a wonderful woman. And Mark shared his gratitude and story with the news that day. I bet he loved that. That attention hog. The more I learn about this man, the more that you despise him. Okay. So this happy couple appeared to be perfect. They just told their families that Lori was 5 weeks pregnant and they were getting ready to move to North Carolina so Mark could go to medical school. Outside looking in, family and friends never thought that Mark was capable of hurting his wife, that he adored so much. But police had their suspicions. You know, police are smart. Let them do their jobs. They know when people are suspicious. Most of the time, if they are trained and if they are doing their job correctly, police know what they're doing. I know there are dirty cops. I know that there are bad police officers, but we're focusing on the good ones today. And so, in between his two calls that Mark made to the police that morning, Mark claimed that he was trying to find his wife, that he found her car where she went jogging. But instead, he was actually going out to buy a new mattress. Red flag, right there, people. And now, I'm gonna let you ponder with that. Right after this break, I'm gonna tell you more. Welcome back, everybody, from the break. I hope you were able to get a drink of water, either eat a snack or whatever. I hope you're enjoying this case, and because there's obviously more to it. So obviously when the police found out that Mark was buying a new mattress, aka replacing his old one, they grew to be even more suspicious of Mark, and obviously he's the number one top suspect, as he should be, because he's sus. And, so, when the police got to search the couple's apartment, they found Lori's purse, her wallet, and her car keys. How can you drive somewhere without, like, your car keys? Granted, they probably had two sets of keys, but still, where's the other set of keys? Is it in the car? I don't know. And they also found a bloody hunting knife. And when police found Lori's car, the driver's seat was pushed back for somebody taller, and there was blood in the back seats. I'm just like, what? Does this literally... Mark doesn't know how to clean up a crime scene. Granted, okay, so later I'm going to share a quote from Mark, and hopefully I'll remember my little tangent that's going on in my head so that I can share it with you guys, because, I don't know, that's something that I'm thinking about, and hopefully I'll remember. But it's just like, bruh, do you not know how to clean a crime scene? If there's blood somewhere, you clean it up. Granted, police and all of the forensic scientists, go you guys, because the technology that they have, they can look at blood after it's been cleaned up, after it's been like bleached and everything. I think, I'm pretty sure, if I'm wrong, don't tell my forensic professors, because I don't know, I like to think I'm a good student, I got A's in their classes, but I don't remember. So yeah, we didn't really go over blood in my classes, but that's what I'm assuming. Police can find things out. So literally just please know that you can't get away with a crime. You just can't. You're gonna be found out. So just don't commit crimes. Don't be an evil person. Thank you. Please. Yeah. Moving on. So the next day, which was July 20th, the police got a disturbance call against Mark. So the caller said that he was running outside of the hotel with nothing on but sandals, so he was naked, except for his feet. Even though his feet were technically naked, because it's just sandals. sorry. Don't think about it. And so after the police came and after Mark was apprehended, he was sent to stay at the psychiatric facility, which is really ironic because he used to work at a neuropsychiatric facility institute place. I'm just like, wow, he's come full circle and he deserves it. Granted, I don't know. Again, a tangent for a later day. You guys need more information first. So, at this point, Lori was still being searched for, and on July 21st, Mark and Lori's families learned that Mark had been lying. He had not been accepted to medical school in North Carolina or anywhere. Mark also did not graduate from the University of Utah. Unlike people believed, he dropped out of college in 2002. Even though he dropped out, Mark still made an effort to, I have finger quotes on right now, but you can't see that because it's a podcast, but imagine me with finger quotes. Attend classes, study his textbooks, and write his term papers. In some cases, he even traveled cross-country to participate in interviews at medical schools. Again, none of this actually happened. And so, I'm just like, what did this man do during this time? Was he seeing somebody else? Like, did he feel guilty for seeing somebody else because he was cheating on his wife that he apparently loved and adored so dearly? And it's like, if you truly love and adore somebody, you wouldn't lie to them about dropping out of college. And, like, I don't know. I'm just like, bruh, I don't understand. And it's really frustrating because all of this could have been prevented if he told the truth and if he didn't let his fear of what other people thought of him paralyze him, you know, because, I don't know, just everybody was shocked by this news. His highly scientific type of family was so shocked because of how important education is to them. And Lori's family treated him like their own son, and they trusted him to take care of and support their daughter. And now they learned that he was lying this entire time, that he actually wasn't going to school full time. And I'm pretty sure at this point he's still working at that hospital, that institute. Granted, now that he's been put away and he's, you know, a suspect of this crime, hopefully he's fired by now. Or he quit, or he resigned, whatever. He did whatever he chose to do. Whatever, I just hope that, I don't know, it's just very frustrating because, Lori went to college. I don't know if she got a degree. I need to look more into that. But she's had to support him through school and everything. I wonder what he's spending all of his money on. And it's just very weird that he lied to her, to his family, to her family, to their friends, people at church, random people he saw at convenience stores. He lied about everything. And kind of stemming back from when he got home from his mission early, he lied in order to kind of protect himself because people can be judgmental towards coming home early from a mission, and especially because he was breaking the rules and going out with girls and everything when you shouldn't be on your mission. He was breaking those rules and he knew that he was in trouble, and he found, like, lying as, like, a scapegoat. He found that lying was his safety net, like, at the circus or whatever. And it's just, it got out of hand. And so, as we know now, Mark didn't need a degree in lying. He had enough experience with it. He knew what he was doing and how to get away with it. I hate to say this, but he was smart in the realm of lying. Everything else that he did with his life, no. But, it's just, this man, I don't know. So a few days before Lori actually went missing, she called the medical school that Mark was supposedly going to ask. Wait, sorry. I need to pause there. So Lori called the medical school that Mark was supposedly going to, and she asked about financial aid. And the school answered and told her that he wasn't enrolled, and he never actually applied there. There was no application under the name Mark Hacking. And obviously Lori was freaking out, and she made this call when she was actually at work, and so her coworkers noticed her crying and her being nervous, and Lori went home early that day, which I totally support. If I found out that my husband was lying to me and they were already planning on moving, Lori's last day of work was in a couple weeks, like, I can't understand that fear that she had, and that he went along with it, whatever. And so she went back to her home, and that evening there was a work party, and there Lori and Mark were, and they seemed happy. Her coworkers didn't question it. They were just like, oh, okay, maybe they just figured it out. Maybe she's just hormonal and pregnancy mood swings. I don't know if her coworkers knew she was pregnant yet. Probably not, because she was only 5 weeks along. I'm not sure. But eventually, we later learned that Lori told Mark about her conversation with the school. She confronted him and was like, what the crap? What's going on? And he comforted her, saying that there was a computer glitch, and that was the reason why his name wasn't on the incoming students list. Wow. What a compulsive liar. Maybe, like, he's just addicted to lying, especially to his wife. Again, the supposed woman that he's madly in love with, that he is starting a family with, that they're having a future together. He's lying to her about everything, and he's just doing it so easily. I don't get it. And like, that lie, that a computer glitch, obviously the school would have known about a computer glitch, and maybe Lori knew that he was lying. Maybe she was just like, whatever, I'm done, we need to get out, we need to go to the party, I can't really talk to you about this anymore. And maybe that's when she just kind of dropped it and was like, okay, whatever, fine. And then she put on a face to be with her friends and her coworkers, even though hell was raging beneath her. You know, I can't even imagine that fear and that anger. I would be pissed. I would be very, very angry nonetheless. And so after Lori talked with Mark and kind of talked things through, figured things out, she called the school back and left a message, since she called after 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because she lived in Utah and North Carolina, you know, time zones, time differences. So she left a voicemail that they would never be able to call her back from. So many believe, me included, that this is when he snapped. While Mark was still in the psychiatric hospital, a couple of his brothers visited Mark. This is the one where he was put after he was stripping and walking around outside the hotel naked in sandals. This is that point. Not when he was working at a psychiatric place. So a couple of his brothers visited Mark. On July 24th, Mark ended up confessing that on July 18th, he shot Lori in her sleep and put her body in the dumpster. That's just awful. Awful, awful, awful. Imagine hearing your own brother say, like, admit that he killed his wife, and you knew that she was pregnant. I have three brothers. Yeah. I can't imagine that. Like, that scares me to think about, because none of them are capable of that. Like, I can't picture that. I can't think of that. And so, when their brothers saw Mark's attorney after their meeting with Mark. The brothers obviously told the attorney about Mark's confession, which was then shared with the police. And on August 2nd, Mark was arrested. Then on August 9th, he was charged with first-degree murder. And so after police learned of Mark's confession, police obviously searched for Lori at a municipal landfill. And it took them 2 whole months until they found her. And her body was really, really decomposed. It was way too decomposed to show any signs of pregnancy. And because of this, because there were no physical signs of pregnancy in decomp, Mark did not face the death penalty. On April 15th of 2005, Mark pled guilty to first-degree murder. Mark told the court, and I quote, this is the quote that I was talking about earlier. He said, "I intentionally shot Lori Hacking in the head with a .22 rifle on July 19th, 2004. She was the greatest thing that ever happened to me, but I killed her and took the life of my unborn child and put them in the garbage, and I can't explain why I did that." Unquote. He knew exactly what he was doing. He knew that entire process, that what he was doing was wrong, and he did it, and he claims that he doesn't know why. He knows why, he just doesn't want to admit that he was scared of coming clean, of telling the truth, even though that's the right thing to do. It's just this, I hate how he's like, "I killed her, and I can't explain why I did it." Like, ugh, gross. So Mark was sentenced to 6 years minimum to life in prison without opportunity of parole until 2035. And while I'm recording this, it is 2022. That is 13 years away. That's wild. While he was in prison in 2006, he decided to provide autographs and other things for a murder memorabilia site. And eventually, when police found out, when his family found out, he stopped that voluntarily. And he has decided to write his life history behind bars. It's just very interesting whenever, like, convicts and prisoners tell their story. And I'm like, what are you gonna share? Are you gonna try to paint yourself in a light where you're innocent? You're not innocent. You're not. You're never gonna be innocent because you murdered your wife and your unborn child. You know? But granted, I'm always so interested in their thinking patterns and figuring out what drove them to do it. And I have my suspicions. Everybody has their suspicions with this case. And I wonder if Mark finished his book, and I wonder if in that book he shares why he did it. I feel like he would, but to be honest, I'm not sure if it's released yet or if it is released. Please somebody tell me in the comments of the post that I'm gonna do for this episode on either Instagram or Facebook. Please reach out to me because I really want to know. And if any of you have read it, let me know. Do you guys like have any weird, wacky experiences? Let me know, because I love hearing these things. It's just like, I know with, what was his name? I think it was like the first case that I did, like my first episode, that one dude who was like a serial killer and serial rapist, Gregory Marlowe. There we go. See, you guys are seeing the way that my mind works. Gregory Marlowe also wrote a book when he was in prison, and I'm kind of interested in that, but I'm also like kind of grossed out by reading serial killers and just killers books. I'm just like, no, I don't want to support you. I hope none of these proceeds go to you because you don't deserve that money. is just very, very interesting and very complex to be able to hear the why behind different people's reasoning. Like, I remember in my physical evidence class, AJS 115, if any of you know what that means, haha. I ended up doing a project on Ed Gein and being able to realize why he did his horrendous crimes, and they are so horrendous. If you guys want me to go over, like, this case, again, I'm okay with that. If you guys are interested, let me know. And if any cases stand out to you that you guys want me to cover, that you want to learn a little more information about, again, reach out, please. So yeah, continuing on. So Lori K. Suarez is the name at Lori's gravesite. Hacking is not on there. That's a win. That is a win. His name does not need to taint her memory any longer. So the Lori K. Suarez Hacking Memorial Scholarship is at the University of Utah's David Eccles School of Business, which is in fact the school that Lori attended. This scholarship helps women in disadvantaged situations and those facing personal challenges. I think that's beautiful. That is wonderful. And this was because of the push that Lori's family had in remembering her and wanting to retain her memory and to keep it pure. Even though the ending is really dark and it's really sad, they managed to be able to make something beautiful out of it, and good for them. I'm really happy for them. Thelma Suarez, Lori's mother, has shared that she and Mike have written letters to one another, and Thelma decided to forgive him for her own peace of mind. Not for anybody else, not for Mark to feel good about himself, but Thelma needed that sense of peace, and she got it. That's what she deserves. Thelma misses her daughter, and so does everyone else who knew Lori. Lori's memory continues on. I know there are some people that I've interacted, they've told me about this case, and they told me that they've known Lori, and it's just, I can't imagine that. And realizing, like, this is what happened to her, and the world knows about it. And it's kind of scary, because I can't even imagine, like, if somebody I knew or anybody was, like, involved in this case, and then the world saw it and was like, oh, this is how I can make money. That is so aggravating, but that is the way that this world is, and it's very sad. The news, they're like, oh, we won't respect these people, this people's privacy, and we will tell their story. And it's just, granted, I feel like a hypocrite as I'm telling that now because I'm doing this on my podcast, but this story needs to be told. Lori's memory needs to be remembered, and I want to learn from what happened. And I hope you guys can understand that. I hope you guys agree that learning from these things is very important. It's also just sickly entertaining to learn this. I hope that's the right word, but that's the first word that came to my mind. But it's seriously something that is common. And it's very interesting how social media and the media in general spreads these stories without giving time for, like, the family to heal and to recover. Granted, outsiders want to know all the information, but then it's like, can we just let the family grieve for a while? I know that happened recently because somebody in my area was killed, and that's just scary. I don't know. Sorry for these, like, tangents that I have, my little TED Talks that I've kind of claimed to be, I guess, sometimes. I hope you guys have a good rest of your week. I hope something good happens to you. I guess I'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening to Secondary Accounts. My name's Meredith. Goodbye.